This episode is brought to you by the Inspire Collection by Kalia. Just because you're working out doesn't mean you shouldn't look fabulous. The Inspire Collection by Kalia was designed with both style and performance in mind. It looks good, feels good, and stays put no matter how you move. And the collection has everything you need for a day at the gym. A support bra, crop tanks, bike shorts, amazing leggings, and more. It's their most versatile collection yet. Shop the Inspire Collection by Kalia now, exclusively at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or, hopefully, how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Right, Caleb, can you say Rob Beckett? And can you say Josh Widdicombe? Good boy, well done.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah, Caleb. And my son Caleb, who's two and always gave up when asked to say Widdicombe, but finally gave it a go. I quite like the name Caleb. That's the name of the singer in The Kings of Leon, isn't it?
Lou wanted to call, if we had a boy called Caleb...
Yeah, it's a good
name. I was against it, but I think I could accept it now. But when it's your first kid and you're from South East London, a working class family, you can't bowl in for Caleb.
You can't bowl in with
it. It's a tough transition.
Oh, you work in the media now, do you, mate?
You f***. Here he comes to f***. I remember, like, we used to get grief off our cousins and aunties and uncles. My brother Dan, in like 98, 2000, had sort of slightly longer hair. And they kept going, oh, here he comes, fucking Paul McCartney.
What a reference.
He had long hair.
What a reference as well.
I know. And then it was like, my hair's a bit longer. People have had long hair since the 70s. What are you talking about? It's not like, it's not 1952. Anyway, I've got some really good Instagrams before we bring on our guest. It's a brilliant guest today as well.
Let's do them. We're doing catch up on correspondence this week, aren't we, really?
Yeah, because we've been blabbering on.
We are so self-obsessed.
Hey, Josh and Rob. A quick story I thought you might enjoy. Last weekend, I asked my son if he wanted to go and feed the ducks some bread that I had left over from school lunches. He turned to me with an extremely upset look on his face, saying, Mummy, bread kills ducks. With a look of shock on my face, I mumbled to myself, not knowing that he could hear me, OK, Mr. Killjoy, I'll throw the bread away. Now, not knowing that he heard me, he pottered down the stairs as I was about to throw the bread out. He looked at me dead in the eye and said to me, Fine, Mummy, let's go murder some ducks.
Whoa!
I held in my laughter as difficult as it was. My son's teacher then does a weekend recap with him on Monday and uploads it to the school app for all the parents in the class to read. My son's weekend update read short yet disturbing with no context. This week, I went to the pond to murder some ducks with my mummy. Safe to say it's Wednesday now and the school has arranged a call with me for 3 p.m. Wish me luck.
That can't be true.
It might be.
Actually,
because I know at my school, one of the mums got taken in because I think if a kid says at school... My mummy hits me or my mummy hits my brothers.
You've got to take it seriously.
You have to take it, yeah.
You can't go, it was banter. The Richard Keys defence doesn't work in these situations. Like,
it's just a bit of banter.
Like, they've got to check those things, haven't they? Because if they overlooked I went to murder the ducks with my mummy and then in 6 months it turned out that that's what they actually had done.
It's not a good look. Yeah, so I suppose what it is they get you in and I imagine it's a very quick, look, he said this, I'm sure it's fine, what's the story?
Yeah.
And then you explain, I'm sure it's fine, but they've got a lodge.
So what's the score with bread and ducks? The RSPB has given a definitive answer on if it's safe to feed ducks, geese and swans bread. This is not my words, the RSPB. Okay. Because this is, according to mylondon.news, a surprisingly divisive debate at the waterside. Mm. Okay.
Yes.
So, A spokesperson said, "Bread is not a natural source of food for water birds such as ducks and geese. For this reason, it is suitable for them, but only in very small quantities. Like humans, birds need a variety of food to be healthy, and bread doesn't offer birds the nutrition they need. So not poisonous, but not exactly a health kick." That last bit is not the words of the RSPB, but the words of mylondon.news. There you go.
Also, this is a great little thing for our audience to get in contact with. When have you been called into the school? The most ridiculous reason you've been called into the school?
Did your parents ever get called in?
I once got put on report and got given a detention because I was part of a group of children that stole a bottle of wine from the PTA. And they were having a little wine and cheese night, and it was all the boxes of wine were out. We sneaked a bottle of wine and drank it in the woods. And I had one swig, and I felt like I was in the Wild West. I hated it. I told my mum immediately, felt horrific, went all red-faced and panicked, and thought I was going to go to prison. I do not like breaking the rules.
Neither do I.
I'm not a rule-breaker kid. I hated it. Yeah. I was a very good boy at school.
Did you like alcohol when you first tasted it? I didn't like it at all. It took years.
Hated it. Yeah. I didn't really like it, and then I didn't really drink at all until I went to university, and I studied tourism, so it's literally nothing to do all day.
Yeah.
So I got into drinking then, but I think I got into drinking more out of nerves.
Yeah, being nervous
to meet girls, meet new people and do things on nights out, and wasn't very confident. So I used to drink for confidence, and then it became part of a sort of habit and a culture of it. But I've not drunk for the whole of May. I've not drunk for 25...
Have you not?
Yeah, about 20, 25 days, and I feel so much better. And I miss that little buzz and fun of a drink, but I am absolutely loving, for nearly a month, I've woken up every morning feeling good.
Incredible. The feeling of waking up, having not drunk in a few days, is like nothing else.
Yeah.
What a couple of old squares.
No, but I went to the pub with Lou for lunch, and it was red hot. It was one of them really hot days last week. And we had a little pub lunch. Kids were in school. We went for a dog walk in the countryside, and the dog was asleep next to us. And I got one. It was nice, actually. It was called like Erdinger. I've never had it before, because a lot of the fake beers are rubbish, aren't they? Alcohol-free. Yeah. And it tasted like it was so nice. It was really cold, and it tasted a bit like beer, but not like a proper beer. And what it was the ceremony that I wanted. I sat down in the sun.
The ritual of the beer.
The ritual of it's hot and it's sunny, let's have a drink. But my problem is I'll have 15.
Yeah,
like I can just drink like a fish.
And the first one's always the first one's the one you enjoy.
Yeah, but then I say to myself, yeah, but you don't want to get drunk all the time because you won't be productive and you'll be tired. But then the other half of my brain goes, you got shit face at the Euros and it was the biggest career boost you've had in about 5 years, Rob. But yeah, if you are trying to not stop drinking, the best one I've had is Erdinger alcohol free. They sell it in like Tesco's and stuff, but I just got it in a normal pub. But that was really nice, and it felt really nice, Josh. But I feel so much fresher not drinking. And parenting is easier when you're not hungover.
Oh, it's so much easier. Well, Rob, it's a lovely message to our audience. Shall we meet today's guest? Which is one of my favourite interviews we've done. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, she's hilarious.
So
really, really good.
Esther
Manito. Great story. Amazing story. Especially, do you know what's really good is that like Romesh did it as well. Like he had like young kids when he wanted to change his career and left teaching and stuff. And Esther Manito is a very similar story. She just had young kids but really wanted to do something different and went for it. And it's really inspiring. She's so funny as well. So it's a really interesting story. So if you're into maybe wanting to change up what you're doing and you're a little bit nervous and scared about it, listen to Esther, because it's a really, really, really inspiring story. She's brilliant.
Here she is. Esther Manito.
You said that like a judge. You're about to sentence me.
Esther Manito, we sentence you to 45 minutes of great anecdotes. Am I right, guys? Anyway.
Jury's out on that one. Thanks for joining us.
How are you, Esther?
I'm all right. Just on the school run, you know.
Just on the school run. How old are your kids?
6 and 8, but you've got a little one, haven't you?
Yeah, so
you're in the eye of the storm. Yeah. You've got two.
I've got two. They are 4 and 0. 4 and 10 months.
4 and 0. Nothing. Oh God, 10 months.
Yeah.
That's a hard age, isn't it? It's where you've got to walk around with them all the time.
Not for him, he's in the Lowry in Manchester.
Yeah, I'm in a hotel, mate. Look at me. It's not a hard age at all.
Well, this is the thing. If you're gonna be a parent, be a dad. That's what I say. Just be a dad. Whatever you do, you're trying your best. But whenever you're a mum, it's just not quite good enough. So I say that to both my kids. I've got a boy and a girl. Yeah. And they're like, when we have kids, and I was like, just be a dad, whatever you do. Just be a dad. My God.
So how do you split the childcare then? You're a full-time comic as well. What was you doing before comedy? Was you working?
I was a teacher.
A teacher?
Yeah, I was terrible at that. And then I had kids and I was terrible at that. And now I do comedy and just slag them all off. And that's my therapy.
So
that's that, guys.
You went... Because you said to us that you've been doing stand-up for 5 years. So started doing stand-up with a one-year-old and a three-year-old.
I had a five-month-old and a two-year-old.
Whoa! Okay.
If nothing screams cry for help more.
And I kept it a secret from my family.
Did you? Really? Yeah.
So what did they think you were doing?
I know. My husband was like, are you having an affair? And I was like, I've been doing stand-up comedy. And he was like, are you sure you don't want to just go and have an affair instead? No.
So how did you do that? Talk us through that transition into...
So it's 5 minutes of open spots is basically an affair, isn't it?
I mean, you do feel really dirty and humiliated. Yeah. And you wake up with you do the walk of shame on the way home. Yeah. Now that I'm getting to know comedians that have children, I absolutely relish every time they're like, how did you do it, Esther? Yeah. Like, how did you do it?
So was you teaching full time as well?
No, I was on maternity leave. I went back to teaching. So I was teaching, had two babies, and I was doing... But you know what it's like. You're doing the open mics. So you can't just turn up and do your spot and leave. You've got to stay the whole time. You've got to bring a friend.
Oh, my God.
So I was getting home at like 1 a.m. And then I was up, you know, still breastfeeding, God knows what.
Jesus.
Those first secret gigs, how were you doing that? Like, what was your cover story?
I used to say that I was meeting my friend in town for coffee.
At night?
At night.
I eventually told my husband, but we kept it a secret from the rest of the family because it would not be approved. My mother-in-law was like, mothers don't do this. No, no husband would put up with this. No. Stop it.
So how long was it a secret from your husband?
No, I kept it a secret from my husband for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, you can't keep that up for longer than that. It's weird.
No, I was embarrassed. I just said it was a course I was doing. I said I'm doing a writing course just to engage me mentally. And he was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he was like, sorry, what are you doing? And then I was like, oh, I'm just doing this course.
But basically you're hanging around in pubs waiting to do stand-up.
No, like a freak. And then the first time I went on stage, I came off and threw up. And I just didn't stop throwing up. I threw up all the way home. And he was like, I don't understand what's going on with you. Oh, no, stop it. Oh. When I say it out loud, I'm like, oh my God.
So you just, when you got home, you was being sick as well.
I literally threw up about 3 times on the way home, just the adrenaline. Because I'd never done it before.
How had it gone? Had it gone well?
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, imagine what you'd have done if you went bad. Just shat myself all the way home. But that happened to me once. I did a TV warm-up that was so stressful. They took me out of a car home, but I was so worked up and stressed and adrenaline, I felt really sick. So I was at a big traffic jam. So I said, it was about a 20-minute walk to my house. I went to the cab driver, and I'll just get out and walk. And he was like, all right. So I got out and walked, and I really need to be sick. And then I walked up to this skip and started being sick in the skip. Oh. But because where the traffic was moving slowly, the cab driver pulled up alongside me and went, you're all right. I went, yeah. Just being sick in the skip. It's not good for your body, is it? Open mics, Esther. And you've just had a baby only 5 months earlier. And you've been sick in a pub toilet.
Don't. I literally, I know. I'm just there vomiting, vagina between my knees. Just like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Honestly. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what possessed me. But I'm glad I did it.
When did you leave your job, full-time job?
Just before the pandemic. So that was really well-timed. I also had a lot of guilt about being a mum.
Yeah.
There was a huge amount of guilt because people were just like, what are you doing? So I was determined that it wasn't going to impact them.
Yeah.
So I would literally just have to be awake 24 hours. Like I was talking to another comic about this. And they were going, but when did you write? And I said, well, what I'd do is I'd drop my little girl off at nursery and then I'd just walk my son in the pushchair so that when he had his nap, and I wouldn't write, I would record. So I'd just be walking around because if the buggy was being pushed, then he would sleep. And then I'd just record ideas for stand up and then re-record it. And that's how I wrote, because I couldn't sit down and write because obviously I had a baby. So I just used to, during his nap time, just walk him.
Blimey.
But in 5 years, there's been 2 years of no gigging, like because of the pandemic. To go from zero gigs to being on Live at the Apollo, which you've done and you smashed it, that is an impossible time frame without the fact that you had a newborn baby and a toddler.
It's incredible.
Yeah, but I'm not a dad though. So,
so was your husband working full time at this point as well?
Yeah.
I don't understand how this works, Esther.
Where's the time?
Yeah. How many gigs a week were you doing? Did you take the kids with you?
I had to take them to Edinburgh. Honestly, there were people that didn't know I had children. I remember I was doing my first Edinburgh and I was walking around with a double buggy in Edinburgh. With a double buggy. And I'm just like walking up the Royal Mall. And Cindy V just walked out of a cafe and just went, whose babies are those? And I was like, they're mine. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean you've got babies? What are you doing? Also because I don't look like my children. So it did look like I just stole them.
You don't look like them at all.
Blonde babies. My son looks a little bit more Mediterranean, but my daughter is incredibly blonde. So it does look like, so people often thought I was just the childminder. Yeah.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
And did your husband go up to Edinburgh with you?
Oh, he did, but he hated it. I mean, it's rubbish bringing your... You stop to speak to people every 5 minutes. They're just loitering around. The kids hated it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're paying to...
Losing money.
The amount of rubbish you have to take them to see. Like, I was taking them to see stuff, paying like 50 quid for four of us, and you're watching some hungover student in the Pleasant Courtyard with a sock on his hand going, hello, I'm Mr. Puppet. And you're thinking, what am I watching?
Oh,
this is
God.
Absolute nonsense. What a load of... And the kids think it's shit, and it's just like, oh, it's rubbish.
Then the money you spent, you could have gone to Disney in Florida.
I know. And the kids are like, "This, it's raining. It's boring. The kids hate it."
So how did the conversation go with your partner then, going, look, I'm doing these gigs, they're going well, and I want to go to Edinburgh?
And then you go to Edinburgh and you're like, I'm just going to take all our savings because mum really wants to be a performance artist. It's like, it's so not okay.
And also it's like that kind of thing of like, when you the baby's only 5 months old, the hormones in your body are still going crazy because you've just had a baby. So there is an argument to go, are you sure you really want to do this? Or is this sort of like a sort of, you know, a kickback to your life changing, you've got the two kids now, and it's sort of like a semi like early midlife crisis, because that is a fair point to bring up, isn't it,
a kind of Victorian intervention, like, should we just strap her down and inject her with Valium? And I feel like that was the conversation my family were kind of having. It was a little bit like... And also, because it's not like you speak to a lot of comedians and they've come from that kind of, you know, especially when I started, like, so many people came from performance art backgrounds, or they had, you know, they'd worked in the industry before, or they'd been runners, or they had an interest. But for me, it was literally just like I came home one day and was like, I'm going to be, I don't know, a tightrope walker. It was like the weirdest thing.
So you've not performed before then and stuff? Nothing like
No. And then we've got quite a close-knit family and everyone's just really conventional and they're just like, what? Like, what are you doing? No. Yeah. Stop it.
So it wasn't like this big, like, oh, she's always dreamed of this. She just popped up.
No. we were just like, are you sure?
But deep down, did you want to and not say it out loud? Or was it a bit of an awakening for you as well, like, at that stage?
I never thought in a million years I could do this. Not in a million years I could do it. So it was a real bolt from the blue. It really was. It's been a really bizarre chain of events.
So what's it like now, though? Because you've obviously proved that you were right. You know, you've been on the biggest, you know, Live at Apollo's the biggest show in the country to go on and do comedy. And is it a bit more like to the mother-in-law? Ha, see? I told you.
The mother-in-law. Ain't just the mother-in-law. It's all of them. I mean, after I did Live at the Apollo, you'd kind of expect, like, everyone to be like, oh, my God. But yeah. The family were like, are you done now? Is that it now?
Got it out of your system?
So I feel like there is nothing I can do to win them over.
So you said, like, you weren't sleeping. So there was a period where...
I had nausea for a year and I kept going to the doctor going, this nausea is just not stopping. And eventually the doctor was like, I think it's exhaustion. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, because I just didn't sleep.
So talk me through, like, your average day if you're teaching, gigging and parenting.
I did a gig once on four Pro Pluses and a Red Bull just to stay awake.
And then what's it like when you got back from the gig at, like, 11?
Yeah, you get back from a gig at 11 and then you would be up, obviously, in the night.
Yeah.
Like, maybe a couple of times. So I'd probably get, like, 4-5 hours a night and then I'd get up, go to work. So obviously you'd get up and then get the kids ready and then drop kids at childminders and God knows what. And then you go to work. Sometimes my in-laws would stay here. They did that for a little while and then they'd look after the kids in the day. So that would be a lot of help. I mean, bless them. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do anything with them.
Yeah, because they're not even at school at that age, are they?
No, my daughter's at preschool. And then, I worked for a little while at University of East London and they had a nursery there. So I could take my son in with me. And then he would go to the daycare centre there. And then, you'd come back and then get the kids ready for you know, feed them and all the rest of it. And then you'd be out the door. But there was a couple of times when my kids would, like, have that post-dinner meltdown.
Yeah.
And I'd have to go to a gig and then they'd be like, and you, like, have them pulled out your arms and I'd run off to a gig and then I'd feel really guilty.
Because it's not like now, I imagine it's different. And, like, you know, when you're more established and you're getting paid work, it's like, okay, you're on at 9 o'clock, get there at 8:30. And then at 9:20, you can go home. So you're only literally popping out for an hour, especially if you're doing London stuff.
Yeah,
but
back then,
it's like you arrive at 6 p.m. You have to put your name down on a list. Sometimes you have to bring two people with you. And then they pull, like some gigs I used to do, they pull a name out of a hat. So you could be going on at afternoon at night. So you're there for 6 hours to do
five minutes.
5 minutes of stand-up and you spent 5 hours waiting.
Yeah. You would have to be there for 7 hours.
Yeah. So, oh my God. It makes it almost impossible to do, really.
I know. It was really intense.
And when did you quit being a teacher then? And did it make it all a lot easier?
Oh God, yeah. I became the world's worst teacher. Like, I'd walk into the classroom, the kids are like, what are we doing today? And I'm like, just shut up and don't talk to me. But I became terrible. We did a lot of essay writing in silence while I would write my set and they would write essays. But it was getting to a point, I remember doing, like, gigs abroad and I'd, like, fly in the morning to, like, City Airport and then go straight to work, or do, like, Cardiff Glee and then get a train at 4 a.m. and go straight to school.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wow. What an... Do you look back and go, what was that period of my life? Because you must have all these photos of you with your kids at that point. And you must just have been like a zombie at this point.
Dead behind the eyes. No, I think it made me a better parent, I'll be honest with you.
Do you?
Yeah.
How? In what sense?
Yeah. I feel like it just made me more animated. I just felt a lot more in touch with my kids. I think it's made me a lot closer to my children. It's made me a much better parent.
Which is enjoying yourself more and stuff. You know, you feel a bit more alive.
Yeah, when you're enjoying yourself more, the tiredness doesn't matter because you're doing it. Yeah. And it just made me a lot more patient with my children because I believe a lot of frustration comes from you know, things that you're not even conscious of.
Yeah.
So you might feel frustrated because of all sorts of external reasons. It's not just the tiredness or that the, you know, kids are doing your head in, but when you're actually fulfilled mentally, it makes it a lot easier to be a lot more tolerant. I mean, I say that, I shout all the time still, but it's just like white noise to them now.
They're just
she's barking in a corner, it doesn't matter, like, just ignore it. But I used to actually feel quite frustrated when I was just with the children. I mean, my son was only 5 months. I say that as if I was doing it for years. I was like literally 2 weeks into it going, no, not for me.
Well, it's quite good that you did it then, though, because as they get older, they have their own social life. When they're 5 months, they've got nowhere to be. But now, like with kids' school parties and gymnastics or swimming club or whatever it is,
when
it's
did
non-stop.
That happen? I don't know. We didn't have that as kids.
No, I know.
Like, when did we got to do all this stuff?
Like, I feel like I'm a PA.
Human beings.
Like, I've got a PA to a tiny Kardashian. Like, I've got to get back. She's got that in.
I know. And the amount of stuff they do, and it's really interesting. Like, my daughter will be like, oh my God, can I do Mandarin dance gymnastics? And I'm like, what? Where is that? Who's doing that? Why is that a thing? It's not even just normal stuff. They're like, oh my God, I really want to do, I don't know, well-being and, you know, mindfulness, Tai Chi. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, my daughter's doing Taekwondo. I can't even spell Taekwondo. Never mind do a class in it.
My son won't do anything. He's just like, no, I'm not doing it. He won't even have friends over.
Really?
He's livid. Yeah.
So what does he do with his day?
I said, like, tonight, she's got a friend coming over after school. He went, oh, God, I don't like a house full of women. And I was like, all right. And so I was like, do you want to have a mate over? And he just looked at me absolutely furious and he went, you know, I like my wind down time. I was like, okay.
Eight.
He's livid.
How old is he? Is he the 8-year-old or the 6-year-old?
No, he's 6. This is a boy who likes to have a bath bomb and listen to a bit of Frank Sinatra. Honestly, he's
How
the
old
funniest
is he?
Kid.
Is that a granddad?
6.
6. Has a bath bomb and listens to Frank Sinatra. It's wind down time.
It's like an old cockney, cut the jelly deals.
He really is. I know, he's like a cockney. He is like a cockney. Whenever he hears a siren, he's like, it's the coppers.
So are you in East London then? Do you live in East London?
Woodford, so Essex, East London, yeah.
Oh, Essexy way, okay. And is your husband Essexy way?
No, he's from Hemel Hempstead.
But so he's working full-time and you're working full-time as a comic now. So how are you splitting the sort of the workload with the kids?
I do all the day. And then he does the evening, but then everyone just goes on about how lucky I am that he's prepared to look after his own children. So I'm very aware of that. He does a lot of babysitting, apparently. He does a lot of babysitting for you, yeah.
So
yeah.
Is that coming from him or more family and friends?
Oh, not from him, at all, no. It was when I started stand-up, people were just like, you're lucky you've got a husband like that. You're really lucky. And I'm like, why is he not lucky?
Yeah.
I mean, we split it, you know. Now it's a lot more balanced, 50-50. Mm. But when I first started, I did feel like I was doing, like, most of it. And then he would do the evening stuff. But, like, little things. Like, if I went away to gig, psychologically, he still saw it as almost like, well, that's for you. That's you enjoying yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Even when I started it as a job.
Do you know, that's the thing about this job, though, that is difficult. I'll throw around the words go to work a lot because I feel it paints it as like
yeah, it makes it look a lot more
of a job. But it's difficult to argue that it's a... Do you know what I mean? It's a grey area when it comes to whether it's a job.
But I would come home and, like... Literally, I'd come home from a gig and literally there'd just be like the clothes going up the stairs leading to the bathroom, then the bath still filled with the bath water and the toys there, and then like nappies leading to the beds where the kids were sleeping, and the kids are asleep in like Halloween costumes, and my husband would be like, you're welcome. And I'm just like, I've now got to like essentially do a day's work of clearing up. Whereas in now... Honestly, like we've really worked it out. So now it's pretty much when I'm in charge, I'm completely in charge. And when he's in charge, he's completely in charge. And we balance it out all 50-50. Yeah. So it's a really good, I'm very fortunate.
You've got more control now, though, of your diary, where back in the day, when you do first start, everything's dictated by someone else. So, you know, he'll be going, well, when are you going to be home? You're like, I don't know. It depends when I get on the gig. I might not get on the gig.
It could be 7 days.
It could be a week.
I'm going to take a sleeping bag and hopefully I'll get 5 minutes at the cab. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because Lou's like that with me when I say I'm going to work. And like sometimes, you know, I'm going to work and like, you know, I went to Jamaica with Romesh to interview Usain Bolt. And like...
So fuck off.
Fuck off. And then, but then I'm like, if I got up to Middlesbrough on a Tuesday, I'm like, come on. That's work.
No, that's work.
The gig will be fine, but it's a long way. I'm driving from Cheltenham to Lowestoft, okay? That is work. That is not... That is not my time.
And what are you like as... What's your different parenting style then? Because you say, well, when I'm in charge, when he's in charge. Do you have a different approach in that sense?
Yeah, so what happens is when I'm in charge, I tell the kids off. And then when he's in charge, he screams, you wait till your mum's here and you're going to be in trouble. And that's how that works. Like, literally, the moment I walk through the door, it's like, oh, she's back now. You're in for it now.
It's like the oldest sibling.
But I've got my dad with me as well.
Mm. Oh, he lives in the house.
So it's a lot of mental energy in this house. There's a lot of craziness. Yeah, so my dad is a 76-year-old Middle Eastern man who just screams at the children all the time. That's, again, like white noise to them. And then my husband's just this long-suffering, you know, very kind of conventional, very calm. But my dad will just constantly threaten the children, which really winds them up as well.
Right. So does your dad clash with your husband about it then?
Yeah, my husband's a bit like, sorry, when did it become that I was going to be married to your dad? Like, I didn't. That's yeah, not
especially
why.
When you're out a lot, it's just them two in the house.
It was my husband's. Oh no, this is how long suffering my husband is. It was my husband's birthday, and on his birthday, he had to take my dad to hospital to have a prostate.
Was you with the kids or are you working?
I was working, so my in-laws were with the children. My husband was texting me going, I just want to say I'm having a really nice time. Your dad's gown has opened 3 times. People are really confused as to what my relationship is with this man.
And can he do childcare? Is he helpful in that way, your dad, or is he
old? But he's brilliant. He's brilliant with the kids. All the grandparents are, actually. Yeah. I'm really fortunate. And I've got to say, like, I go on about how hard it was and stuff. There are people that don't have grandparents helping. Yeah. And I like, hats off to them, or single parents. How do they do it? Because I've had, like, my in-laws, my parents, they're really involved. And that's the only way I could do it.
Yeah.
The only way I could do it. And my dad will, like, overlap if I've got to go to a gig and my husband's not finish work yet, my dad can sit with them for an hour or whatever. And as they get older, it gets easier because they can sort themselves out a little bit, as long as there's just an adult in the house.
And what are their parenting techniques like? How much does your parenting overlap with your 76-year-old Middle Eastern dad?
Yeah, has he got old school ways of parenting?
Yeah, I took a photo the other day because he walks to school with us every single day.
Yeah.
Which essentially is really stressful for me because my dad will just march into traffic. Like, my dad just rants. So he doesn't have, like, that thing of internal dialogue. Everything's just external. So we'll just be walking to school while he swears all the time. And the kids are now aware that they can't swear, but he just swears. So he'll rant to school. And you're like, there are other parents walking their kids to school. Can you just stop swearing? And he'll just be screaming about Russia or whatever on the way to school and just marching into traffic. And then you've got two kids on scooters who are just like, so it's like herding geese all the way to school. You're like grabbing one and grabbing the other and just like, right, can we all just try and stay in one unit? It's a very bizarre combination of people walking to school every morning.
Can he not take him in without you then? That's a little job done then. Or is he not, can't be trusted to take them both in?
I get nervous about him just marching them into traffic. But also I kind of feel a little bit like, I should do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like sometimes if I'm, you know, I just feel like, I should do it. I should kind of take them in. So, yeah.
Because at my school, there's some grandparents that bring them in every day because they live near to the kids and stuff. Sometimes, though, at the end of a term, they look fucked. Like a little 8-year-old geezer. Like, There were some parents that went away on holiday. I think they went away for a week. And then their grandparents came in and lived with the kids for a week and looked them up. By the Friday, he looks so... My mum and dad always... My mum and dad are like corpses. When they come, like, if we go away for 2 nights, they're like... And even the teacher went to me, call, your mum looked tired the other week when she dropped them off. My mum and dad get up at 11 a.m. if they're left on their own. So they're up at 6 in mine.
It is a lot for grandparents. You forget how hard little ones are. Like, it is like you just got to wrestle them. It's like having chimpanzees on acid, isn't it?
Yeah.
When they're little.
I'm dreading being a grandparent in that sense. The thought of, like, me at 70 having to deal with what I'm dealing with now, even for 2 days.
My dad has got to a point now where he can't even be bothered to, like, he'll just be like, I can't be, but I'm not going to get up and smack you because I can't be bothered. I mean, I don't do smacking, and obviously that's a very old school thing. So he just says to my kids, he just goes, I'm just going to put my fist out. You just got to run towards it. And they think it's really good fun.
So were you born here or born in the Middle East, Esther?
No, I was born in Essex. He moved here, yeah.
Yeah,
he
moved and here. So did you have a different upbringing, though? Was his parenting different then to, like, your schoolmates in Essex, or was he as the same as all the other dads?
Yeah, it was really embarrassing. Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. He'd be really militant. I remember he would stand, God love him, but he would just do things that, like, to me, I was just so used to it, but my friends would just be like, he sometimes, if I was doing my homework, he'd stand over me with a crowbar, just like what? That.
That's in a jokey way, though.
Kind of in a jokey way.
Kind of.
Or, like, I was talking about the fact that my husband's really good at, like, waking up the children. He does it. He's got this little song and he wakes them up, and he's so sweet the way he wakes them up. And he was like, oh, I got it from my mum, because that's how she used to wake us up. My dad used to wake me up in the morning. I kid you not, he just used to walk into our room and throw a cup of water in our face.
Oh, my God.
It was like the army. You had one warning.
Imagine doing that now. That is not allowed, is it? Boomer. No, that is classic boomer parenting.
I know. He used to get one warning. He'd be like, Esther. And if I didn't get up, psh.
The weird thing I've took away from that, though, is that I can't believe some people have to wake up their kids. I've never woke mine up. They've always woke us up. I've never woken my child up.
I'm telling you, for school, I have to drag him. I have to drag my son out of bed by his feet, and he crawls back in.
And is he the young one or the old one?
The younger one. This is the one who likes his me time.
Oh, no. Ours are up at 6 latest every day.
No, but the moment that it's not school, if it was half term or something, boom, they're up.
What time are you waking them up for school?
They have to get up at 7.
I've never, except holidays, I've never had to wake my child.
Really?
No. Well, occasionally when, you know, when you go through those periods where it's like, oh, they're napping for too long, is that going to have an impact in the evening? That kind of situation, yeah. But... all that crap.
Yeah.
But, like, never of the morning have I thought. Occasionally you'd wake them by mistake when you were worried they were dead because they were still asleep. Do you know that situation? Because they'd slept till 6:30 instead of 6.
Yeah, exactly. That when they're babies.
Yeah, but isn't sleep deprivation the worst? I can handle anything, but it's the sleep is so hard. That is the hardest thing.
Were they good or bad sleepers when they were babies? Like,
my son was good, but I think that's probably because he was the second one. You just forgot about him quite a lot. I already had a baby, so I was just like, there's another one now. So he'll just have to sort himself out.
Does your husband do a creative job or anything like that?
No, he works in IT. He's a normal person.
He's a normal person. A normal person. Poor bloke, just a normal bloke, just wanted to go to his 9-to-5.
Yeah, he's like, why didn't I marry someone called Becky? He's normal.
Just wants to go to a bottomless brunch once every 3 months, and that's it.
I know. He's like, what am I doing? I've got this old Arab man who's just wandering around in his pants screaming at me. I've got to take him for prostate checkups. I've got this wife who's slagging me off on stage. Yeah. This is not what I signed up for. I've got a son who's listening to Frank Sinatra.
I think it's easier being a mum. I've gone full circle.
Can we dig down into this son that listens to Frank Sinatra and has a bath bomb and likes to unwind?
What point
did that begin? Like, when did you go, this is a different personality type to my daughter? Like, how early was that?
I don't know when he suddenly, but he's a really quirky little lad.
Yeah.
He's really funny. He really makes me laugh. They had World Book Day, didn't they, recently? Which we all remembered 45 minutes before World Book Day. And it was just like... and I was thinking, like, what am I... And I said to my son, like, you've got to just wear something from the fancy dress box. And he was like, I ain't doing it. I'm not wearing it. He was going, I'm going to school in my school clothes. I'm not dressing up in fancy dress. And I was like, no, don't do that, because it makes me look like I'm the mum that forgot it was World Book Day.
Yeah.
And it makes me look bad. So then he went, I'm just going to wear normal clothes. And then if people ask me what I am, I'll just say I'm an author. And I was like, well, no, just be something. And then he'd seen a book on the bookshelf and he went, and he looked at the bookshelf and he went, I'll just say I'm Jeffrey Archer. And I was like, you're not going at six.
As Jeffrey Archer. Prison scrubs who are great joggers. What did your daughter go as?
Matilda.
Oh, that's a good one.
Strong.
But she takes school really seriously and she doesn't like to let anyone down. She's really earnest. So she's just like, I've really got to commit 100% to this. They're very different. They're such different. It's funny though, isn't it?
Do they get on?
They either really, really get on to the point that they're hysterical and laughing and crying and you cannot get involved whatsoever and they don't listen to you because they're in this frenzy of absolute euphoria, or they're absolutely kicking the shit out of each other. And there is no in between.
Oh, actual fighting?
Yeah.
Who's getting the better of it? Should run a book? Live stream it. £10 on the girl.
Oh my God. She just lets, like, he'll really lay into her and she'll just kind of be like, I was so happy one time when he came storming to the kitchen. He was like, she has just punched me so hard. And I was like, oh, thank God. You know when you're like, we can't smack our kids.
Yeah.
No.
So you know when you're like, sometimes they do just need a slap. And I'm like, he needs a slap. And I'm glad she's done it. Because I can't do it. I can only intervene so often. But she turned around and she was like, enough, and clumped him. And I was like, good. You deserved it.
Amazing.
Did your dad say that then? Like, you're too soft on him?
No. That's what annoys me. Oh. Is if I lose my temper, he'll step in and be like, you know, come on, you need to calm down. And I'm like, where was that attitude when I was growing up?
Where was that when you had the crowbar?
Being waterboarded, when you had the crowbar.
Did you think they get softer as they get older? Or do you think that they were basically in a high level of stress with work and look back and probably think, yeah, I was too harsh on them?
Yeah, that's the joy of being a grandparent.
Yeah.
You can just go make up for all the... And also because you got more time.
Yeah.
But grandparents are so soft on them. And like, they'll always be like, oh, that's really harsh. Or, you know, they think that you should kind of devote all your time to them. But when they were, you know, when they had kids and they were working and stuff.
You got by, it didn't affect you, did it? You just sort of had an extreme breakdown after the birth of your second child and threw yourself into the world of comedy to force yourself to be physically sick, get emotionally stressed and exhausted. And then now it's all right, isn't it? You got microphones and some headphones.
You know, I got woken up by, you know, ice bucket challenge most mornings. But it was fine. Totally didn't affect me. I don't know if your parents do this. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter how much you establish yourself. The moment you're back with your parents, you just completely revert to being seen as 14 still.
Yeah.
So my dad still will like slap me around the head in public.
Fucking hell.
Which really annoys me.
Wait, I can imagine it annoys you.
I think you're right to be annoyed.
He'll do it actually, even if there's another, like, he's so oblivious as well. So a friend of mine was around my house. He didn't even clock that wasn't me. So he walks into the house, slaps around the head and goes, what's for dinner? And my friend just turned around and was like, I don't know. And that's not okay. And I was like, Dad, you can't just slap women. Like, you can't. I just walk into the house in your pants and slap a woman around the head and go, what's for dinner?
They had it easy in the 70s, didn't they, men? Yeah. What a life. That was okay then.
Oh, my word.
Not now. Quite rightly, not now.
So it's quite hard when you're trying to do, like, your feminist stuff on it. You know, my show, like, my stuff on stage is all kind of very, like, feminist and all the rest of it. And then I come home, just get slapped around the head, what's for dinner? And you're like, oh.
Things on toast.
I know. And my son's like, and I will be taking my dinner upstairs in my drawing room after my bath, which you will draw for me, mother. I think my relationship now with my kids, is definitely a lot calmer. Yeah, now, especially with stand-up being, as you say, a bit easier because you can just go out and do your gig and then come home again. And I know you're in a hotel room, Josh, but I hate it. I hate staying away.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You know, when you do a weekend at the Glee?
Yeah.
And then you get a hotel. I'd go up, do my gig at the Glee, and then come back and then go back again the next night as to not stay in a hotel.
Really?
What is it? You don't like being away from your kids or you just don't like hotels?
I don't like being away from, but also I feel like I'm missing out on that day of just getting stuff done.
Yes.
And yeah. You know, and it's like one's got ballet, one's got this. I just want to be involved that I've done a day of stuff. Otherwise, you just sit around the hotel room.
No, I use the hotel room. I get all of my work stuff done. That's because I find it so difficult to work at home. So when people are like, oh, do you want to do that? Like this, for instance, it's like, oh, perfect time is when I'm in a hotel room because then I've got that exact downtime.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could just tour Monday to Friday when they're in school and then you don't have to come back and do stuff.
Maybe I could just tour like Monday to Friday, 11 a.m.
That's the dream. Whenever I go to comedy, it's a dream job. It would be if every gig was at the end of my road at 11 a.m.
I know. Don't you want Friday and a Saturday off? That's what I want.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, if I could choose a tour of matinees, it'd be incredible. Get there at 2, knock off at 4. No, people are working, like... Esther. That's why we can't do it. They've got normal jobs.
People have got normal jobs. Becky in the IT department. Well, that brings us on to our last question, Esther. If there's one thing that your husband does that's annoys you with his parenting and frustrates you, and if you listen back, he could act upon it and stop those ways. Is there anything, Esther, that he does?
So when I do go away and gig, the kids ask him to pretend to be me.
Okay.
And I feel like this is really creepy, but he does this impression of me for the children, which they now love, and they're like, can you pretend to be mum? And he's like, okay, which honestly makes me out to be like one of the Don Mio puppets, and it really does my head in. Because when I was like, what does it consist of, like, essentially this woman just like coming in and being like, oh, your mama. And I'm like, not really sure. Because I do speak a little bit in Arabic and English with my kids, but he does this in French because obviously he doesn't know Arabic. So he just puts on this like foreign accent and does this impression of me to the kids. And it does just make me out to be like, yeah, this kind of caricature of an old Italian lady. So I'd like him to stop doing that.
So you'd quite like, so ideally you want your dad to stop hitting you and your husband to stop doing racist impressions.
If all the men in my house could stop being really misogynistic and racist, that would be amazing.
It's nice to have a dream, isn't it? But like a pipe dream of a utopia, but you know.
Esther, this has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much.
It's so good. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know, I think it's really inspiring as well to any mums and dads listening that are like, you know, if you lose your personality and identity a little bit sometimes when you first have a kid and you feel a bit lost. And to have an example of what you've done is amazing. So I think you should be really proud of that.
Yeah.
Whatever it is you want to do, if you're drawing, singing, gigging, starting a company or whatever, just go for it.
Because, do something for yourself. Yeah definitely.
And
definitely.
Then you become a better parent for it, don't you? Because I think that's the thing. You think, if I do that, I'll be a bad parent. But actually, it gives you that fulfillment, which then, you know, spreads your energy in a positive way to your kids rather than being frustrated.
I mean, I'm still a terrible parent.
But... Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we've got that. We've got that, yeah.
Just not as bad as your dad. That's the main thing. Not as bad as your dad.
No, exactly. Yeah, it takes a few generations to get it right, doesn't it? Anyway.
They're going to be great.
Yeah. Esther, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Esther. It's been brilliant. Esther Manito, that one, I'm going to say it, Josh, was one of my favourite episodes.
Straight into the Hall of Fame. Straight into the Tom Parry realms of Hall of Fame, that one, isn't it?
Funny, which is always the main thing, and interesting story. Sometimes you don't always get both, sometimes you get neither. How amazing is Esther Manito? That's her rise to Live in the Apollo is absolutely astronomical. She's
what
hilarious
thing.
And she's just going to get better and better. She's a real star in the making, I think, Esther Manito.
So good.
I think if that was the first time you've listened to her, I don't think it'll be the last. She's brilliant, really funny.
Follow her on social media. Is that what we say at this point, Rob?
Yeah, she's on Instagram. Let's do the power of the pod. Let's send everyone over there. Everyone go and follow her on Instagram. And she's a watcher live at the Apollo. But yeah, brilliant, Esther Manito. Very, very inspiring as well. If you're listening to this and you feel a bit down in the dumps and you're losing yourself, you're losing your way, just go out and do something for you. And I think you become a better parent. It won't make you less caring or a worse parent. I think it can only... The happier you are, the happier your kids are, in my experience. So put the oxygen mask on first, on the plane and in your life, and then the kids will be happier.
Oh, what a lovely ending, Rob.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
It was nice.
See you on Tuesday.
See you on Tuesday. Bye.